Are expectations mostly a good thing or mostly a bad thing? Well, on the plus side, we know that children often do better. They work harder, they practice longer, they study more when their teachers or parents have high expectations of them. Psychologist Robert Rosenthal did some research in the 1960s. He tested children at a school at the beginning of the school year with a test that told the teachers, a test that he told the teachers would measure academic blooming. That is, it would reveal which students were expected to begin a year of high academic achievement. And the teachers at the school, 18 of them in all, were told which students fit in each category. And all the students were tested at the end of the year to see how much they bloomed by the end or achieved. What the teachers didn't know was that the kids they were told would bloom were assigned to that category at random. There was actually no reason to think these particular kids would do any better than the others. But the teachers thought they would, and many of them did. Now, it only happened with younger children, mostly those in first and second grade. But still, it's kind of interesting that teachers and probably other adults can affect a child's behavior and success by their expectations. As it turns out, this works with rats, too. Before Rosenthal did his research on teachers and their students, he did an experiment on psychology students and lab rats. He told his students that there were two groups of rats. One group had been bred to be good at running through mazes and finding the cheese. These were called maze bright rats. And the second group of rats was not supposed to be good at this, and they were called maze dull. So maze bright and maze dull. Actually, all the rats were just standard lab rats, but the rats that students thought were maze bright did learn the mazes more quickly than the maze dull ones. Apparently, students had unconsciously influenced the rats by their expectations. This is called the experimenter expectancy effect. That's why, you know, you've heard of double-blind tests where the person can't know that they're getting, whether they're getting the real drug or the fake one, but the people giving them out can't know either. That's double-blind, triple-blind. Even the people who are doing the experiment are not supposed to know. Rosenthal figured there might be a similar effect with teachers, which is why he did that other study. So if you're dealing with rats or with first and second graders, expectations has a real, they have a real effect. And here's a case where someone's expectations of himself had a powerful effect. This story has made the rounds of a lot of churches and can be found in a lot of books and lectures on positive thinking, sometimes with embellishments that weren't there in the original, but it is based on a true story, which you will get now. A mathematician at Stanford, George B. Danzig, who died several years ago, 2005, told this story about what happened to him in 1940 when he was a student at Berkeley. He says, during my first year at Berkeley, I arrived late one day at one of Professor Jerzy Neyman's classes. On the blackboard, there were two problems that I assumed had been assigned for homework. I copied them down. A few days later, I apologized to Neyman for taking so long to do the homework. The problem seemed to be a little harder to do than usual. I asked him if he still wanted it. He told me to throw it on his desk. I did so reluctantly because his desk was covered with such a heap of papers that I feared my homework would be lost there forever. But about 6 weeks later, one Sunday morning about 8 o'clock, my wife and I were awakened by someone banging on our front door. It was Professor Neyman. He rushed in with papers in hand, all excited. "I've just written an introduction to your papers, to one of your papers. Read it so I can send it out right away for publication." For a minute, I had no idea what he was talking about. To make a long story short, the problems on the back blackboard that I had solved, thinking they were homework, were in fact two famous unsolved problems in statistics. That was the first inkling I had that there was anything special about them. Now, can you imagine what would have happened if Danzig had known that the problems on the board had never been solved? He wouldn't have ever even tried them. I mean, at least if he were me, I wouldn't. He wouldn't have tried to do anything with them. But because he didn't know, because he thought they were just homework, He expected to be able to solve them. And solve them he did. It might be interesting to speculate on what you and I could do if we didn't believe it was out of our league. Now, that's an argument for expectations being a good thing. But expecting children and students to fail can also have a powerful negative effect. And even well-intentioned expectations can sometimes have negative results. For example, how many people are raised with expectations they can never fulfill, and they end up feeling like failures? Girls expected to be quiet and unassuming. Boys expected to be tough and unemotional. Viktor Frankl, in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, wrote about his life and in a Nazi concentration camp. And he has this story about a fellow camp resident. Incidentally, this book was printed by our own Unitarian Universalist Beacon Press. Just kind of a nice thing to know that even years ago, they were printing important works. Anyway, here's his story about a fellow camp resident. Now, everyone knew that Frankl was a doctor and a psychiatrist. And so this particular camp resident came up to him and said, "I would like to tell you something, doctor. I have had a strange dream. A voice told me that I could wish for something, that I should only say what I wanted to know, and all my questions would be answered. What do you think?" I asked. "I asked that I'd like to know when the war would be over for me. You know what I mean, doctor, for me. I wanted to know when our camp would be liberated and our sufferings come to an end." "And when did you have this dream, sir?" I asked. "In February 1945, it was then the beginning of March. "What did your dream voice answer?" Furtively, he whispered to me, "March 30th. When this man told me about his dream, he was still full of hope and convinced that the voice of his dream would be right. But as the promised day drew nearer, the war news which reached our camp made it appear very unlikely that we would be free on the promised date. On March 29th, the man suddenly became ill and ran a high temperature. On March 30th, the day his prophecy had told him that the war and suffering would be over for him, he became delirious and lost consciousness. And on March 31st, he was dead. To all outward appearances, he had died of typhus." Ironically, the camp was liberated not long afterwards, and if the man hadn't had this particular expectation, he might have made it till then. There's also been some interesting research done on the effects of alcohol. We all know that if you drink a large amount of alcohol, it has a very obvious effect on you. But what if you just have one glass? Let's say one part vodka, four parts tonic water. In several studies, researchers took a bunch of people and divided them into four groups. One group was given the vodka with tonic water and told that that's what they were getting. The first group was told that they were getting vodka and tonic, and that's what they were getting. The second group, the second group got vodka with tonic, but was told it was just tonic. The third group got just plain tonic and was told what it was. And the fourth group got tonic, but was told it was tonic and vodka. So everybody got one glass. And you know what? The people who believed they drank vodka got a little high, regardless of whether they actually had any or not. And the people who believed they didn't have vodka did not get high, regardless of whether they drank it or not. The people who thought, who had tonic but thought it was booze got higher than the people who actually did have the booze but didn't know it. So expectations can be powerful, either positively or negatively. But whether they're positive or negative, they tend to filter our reality through our customary ways of viewing the world. Try a little experiment with me. If you look at the doxology in your order of service, which we sang after the first reading from Ecclesiasticus, doxology and meditation. Any of you notice anything strange about how the words went? All right. If you read it carefully, it says, from all that dwell below the skies, let songs of hope and faith arise. Let peace, goodwill on earth be sung, in every land by every tongue. Even if you caught, did anyone catch them all? Okay, anyone miss them all? All right. Probably, a lot of us probably catch some of them, but not the others. But even if you caught some of these oddities your first time through, you probably didn't catch everyone. And that's because we tend to see what we expect to see. And that's actually a good thing most of the time, because it would take a long, long time to read anything if we had to go through it slowly enough to catch every irregularity. That's why you should never proofread your own writing. You will not see the mistakes. So we, in general, go through life seeing more or less what we expect to see, and we save time that way. But that also means we tend to get our biases confirmed. Psychologists call this tendency expectation confirmation. We tend to ignore things that don't fit with our already held beliefs, and we look for things that confirm them. Now, at some point, of course, even long-held expectations can be shattered if we've gotten enough evidence. And we've probably all had that experience, when we realized we'd been wrong for a long time. But think of all the time we didn't see the truth because we weren't ready to. Think of the people in our own country today who aren't yet ready to see the truth. Expectation confirmation tends to simplify our lives, of course. And if we never knew what to expect, it would take us a long time to figure anything out. But it can also distort the way we see people and groups, especially the ones who are not part of our tribe. Now, the problem I have with expectations is that they sometimes, actually quite often, cause me grief in the end, especially when I expect people to act a certain way and they don't. I became very aware of this one time when I heard someone talking about what she expected of other people. I think it might have been how she expected people to treat her or how she expected them to behave. And suddenly someone else in the group said, well, you know what expectations are. They're resentments in training. I don't think the person who'd been speaking heard the guy, because he just went on and complained about how people were so disappointing. But the comment struck with me because I could see that it was frequently true in my own life, that my expectations are sometimes resentments in training. It's not that they start out that way. I don't necessarily start out with ill feelings or indignation, but they so often end up there. They so often set me up for that in the end. Here are a few quotations you might find interesting. The physicist Stephen Hawking, who died not long ago, said, my expectations were reduced to zero when I was 21. Ever since then, everything has been a bonus. From the author Donald Miller, when you stop expecting people to be perfect, you can like them for who they are. And my favorite, there are two ways to be happy. Improve your reality or lower your expectations. In fact, studies show that older people tend to be happier, and it may be because a lot of us have given up, you know. Do I need to do that? Whatever. You know. A good example for me was when I was in college and I was on a trip with a bunch of fellow Catholic seminarians in the Chicago area. It was probably a trip from Chicago to the West Coast for the summer. But on the way, we stopped to see, I think it was the Carlsbad Caverns. All I remember is that it was a beautiful and gigantic underground. It looked like a cathedral. It's just an amazing thing. Many years later, I went to see the Cave of the Mounds here in Wisconsin near Madison. And someone told me how cool it was. And in my head, I was thinking, I'll bet that was that place I visited years ago. That'll be so cool. Well, it was sort of cool. But not as vast and beautiful as I had remembered. And then our guide said, okay, now before we go into this next chamber, I want all the kids to come forward and close your eyes because I think you'll be surprised and amazed by what you see. And my heart skipped a beat because I thought, this must be where the real caves begin. I can hardly wait. So I waited for the kids to go in first in ooh and aah. And then I went in to see, well, not what I was expecting. What I saw was a cave niche, just like so many we'd already seen, only this one had troll dolls on it. That was the big surprise. I don't think I have ever been as disappointed, except maybe for Election Day. But I hadn't been expecting, but if I hadn't been expecting something so grand, it probably would have been a great experience. The Cave of the Mounds is cool, but I brought expectations to it that didn't allow me to see that. But I had the opposite experience too. When my husband Craig and I first went to Italy, we decided to go to Venice, and we got off at the Venice train stop. And when we did that, we expected to take a bus to get to Venice proper. Instead, when we walked out on the station door, we found ourselves standing on the stairs leading down to the water. We were already there. And because we didn't expect to see Venice so soon, we were overwhelmed by its beauty. I suspect that if and when we go back some other day, we might not have that feeling of awe that we had the first time. To this day, I still believe our lack of expectations is part of what made the experience so memorable. In my own family experience, I can tell you that when I was growing up, my parents expected all of us to grow up to be good Catholics. We were a very religious family. We were called the Holy Larson family in our church. But chinks in the army began. In fact, kids would say, "Hey, Holy Lousin boy." And they thought that was very funny. But clinks in the armor began to appear. First, it was my brother who got divorced. And that was a Catholic no-no, especially then. Then it was my other brother marrying outside the Catholic Church. And then it was me leaving the Catholic seminary and the Catholic Church and joining a different church. And worst of all, it being the Unitarian Universalist Church, the worst of all possible religions in my parents' eyes. Eventually, someone just told my mother, just lower your expectations. And she said, at least your kids haven't killed anybody. And my mom got a lot happier after that. When she gave up the hope of a good Catholic family to carry on. Ironically, incidentally, not one of us stayed Catholic. My sister became a nun, but she's now something like a Buddhist, Hindu, Sikh, pagan. And my brother Harry became a fundamentalist, and the others don't go anywhere. And actually, my mother's lowered expectations helped me in the end, too, because I asked her once, I said, "Mom, how did you feel when you found out that I was gay? Did that bother you?" And she said, "No. I figured you'd already left the Catholic Church. What more could this different? I mean, what could more, you know?" You know, the Buddha once taught that the cause of most of our suffering is that we want too much. We're too, well, the Sanskrit word he used was tanha, which literally means thirst. It is sometimes translated as desire or greed or addiction, sometimes as clinging, possessiveness, attachment, but its literal meaning is thirst. We thirst for a life that's better than what we have. We thirst for friends who always appreciate us. We thirst for spouses who never disagree. We don't usually say those things overtly, but in our heart of hearts, that's what we find ourselves wanting and thirsty for. And it's actually a kind of greed, but because it's not in material things necessarily, we don't always recognize it as that. And expectations are sometimes a part of this thirst or greed. We expect our boss or supervisor to thank us for the good job we did, or at least to notice it. And if she doesn't, we're indignant, or at least disappointed. We expect our parents to realize what great offspring we've been. And that if they don't tell us that from time to time, or they do tell us but not very convincingly, we feel let down. Or, I expect my sermon to be a big hit wherever I go. And if it's not, or at least I don't hear enough people to convince me it was, I might feel a little disheartened. Not today, though. You don't need to worry about today. On the other hand, expectations like the one the mathematician had, George Danzig, who expected to be able to do what he thought was a homework assignment, but was actually two unsolved problems in statistics. Those kinds of expectations remind us there may be talents and abilities in us that we haven't discovered because no one ever showed us the possibility, so we never expected to find it. Now, I'm not trying to be Pollyanna here. I'm not saying you can achieve anything your heart desires. I'm saying only that the last word hasn't been spoken about you yet, that there is no telling what new ideas you may have or talents you'll discover or friends you will come to cherish. So there you have it. Expectations can be powerful. They can be good or bad. They are both convenient and distorting, necessary and problematic. I can't tell you not to have any because that's not really possible. I can't tell you to keep them high or keep them low because there are good reasons for both at different times. But what I can suggest is, one, occasionally stop and notice when you have expectations and what they're bringing to your experience. And two, whatever your expectations are, don't be too attached to them. Expect what you want from yourself or others, but don't get bent out of shape when you or they don't fulfill them. And three, sometimes engage in an activity without expectations. Do it intentionally. For example, a common form of a Buddhist form of meditation is to do something in the present moment without filtering it through labels and concepts and ideas and categories. Like, eat something while being completely aware of the experience. Or wash dishes without the thought of it as a job or a burden, but just feeling the suds in the and the sponge and the hand and the washing over the plate or the bowl or the fork. Incidentally, if any those of you who used to watch Jay Leno on TV when he was on The Tonight Show, he had someone who would go out in public places where there were kiosks and kind of a fair atmosphere, and he'd invite people to come in and he'd say, you know, I'd like to demonstrate this machine for you. It'll improve the taste of your food. And that sounded kind of interesting. So he'd give someone like a carrot to eat, and they'd eat it. And he'd say, okay, now take the rest of this, take this other carrot. We're going to put it on this machine, and it'll jiggle it up and down. And he said, that moves the atoms and molecules around so that the juices come out, and it'll taste a lot better. And they said, okay. And they took it, and every single one went, oh my God, this is amazing. You can have that experience. Just stop and do whatever you're doing. You might want to try this after the service today. Eat your snack or drink your coffee or tea without any preconceptions. Just be here now with whatever you're doing. You don't have to do it all the time. It's not even possible. But once in a while, as a way to remind yourself that what you experience through life is not always what is there, but is what you brought to it. No need to cling to categories and judgments that may have worked in the past. Don't be, if you're a Star Trek fan, you'll get this, don't be a Klingon. Be willing to be surprised. That's the key to almost all new knowledge. Remember that there will always be pain in our lives, but suffering is sometimes optional. And remember, too, that the greatest obstacle to happiness may just be the vision of your in your head of what you expect it to be. Good luck.